Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Conservative.
What I don't like about Washington is they're very nice to your face, and then they take a shiv or a machete and they stab it in your back. I'm a Wall Street guy, and I'm more of a front stabbing person, and I'd rather tell people directly how I feel about them.
Nobody talk about politics, like, don't say anything, you know.
A marriage that's been through it all.
She has filed for divorce over his naked political ambition.
These are the views of a couple in love, a couple with children, a couple with differing opinions and perspectives. A couple that survived.
He's kind of like an impetuous guy. In many ways, that's great. In some ways, it's tough when you're married.
What leads them back to each other? Communication, conversation, and a realistic outlook on the world we live in. Your hosts, Anthony and Deirdre Scaramucci. This is Mooch and the Misses.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's the Misses here. Welcome back to Mooch and the Misses. Anthony is—he left me in the lurch again. He's in Hillary's favorite state, Michigan. But we have him on the line. We figured out we could dial. What?
No, Wisconsin's her favorite state. She liked it so much she didn't come to Wisconsin during the campaign.
Oh, why did I think it was Michigan? See, I'm not a true.
She got here once. She got here.
Lefty.
She got here
even
once. She got
stuff.
To Michigan once. She lost both states, though.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks for the info.
Who are we quibbling?
So, we have a lot to get into today. Of course, Trump's on a tweet storm going off about Stormy and Pocahontas and you name it. So, I don't know if you've had a chance to check any of that out because you've been in meetings, but have you seen any of his stuff?
No. I not only did I see it, what I find fascinating about today is that there's nothing on the president's schedule. So, you know, I could see him sitting there.
He's bored.
I could see him there. He's
in his
boxers.
Robe or something.
He's probably up in the master bedroom somewhere in the closet in the boxers, just firing away tweets.
Oh, why does he have the day off? He just needed a respite?
I don't know. I mean, we should probably ask his assistant how he gets a day off, and I'm here in Michigan.
Right.
But there he is. He's firing in tweets. Also, I don't know if you'd notice, one of the things that he's doing is they've got a steady cam on him, and they're shooting him inside and outside, and he's just literally barking at the at the camera. So the new communication style, which, by the way, I give two thumbs up to, is just let Trump be Trump. And, you know, he's doing press sprays. He's doing press conferences. He's doing interviews on Air Force One. He took 60 Minutes on.
No offense, but he never had a different strategy. He's been barking since they let him out of the cage.
Yeah, no.
It's not a new strategy. It's just the only one he knows how to use.
They had him corralled there for a little while where they weren't letting him do a lot of
it. For like 1 second, like a minute.
What topic on these tweets do you want to hit?
He
is tweeting about Michigan, right? John James is running.
All right, but that's boring. We need to talk about the Stormy Daniels stuff because basically a federal judge in California dismissed that lawsuit, that defamation lawsuit that Stormy brought against the president, saying,
yep,
you know, that's just like political jargon and rhetorical hyperbole, and if he wasn't allowed to say things like that, it would, you know, that can't happen. So he has to have public discourse
public,
and say
public, yeah.
Right. So he has to be able to say what he wants to say, according to this judge. So that's been thrown out. But so then he's taking to Twitter, calling her a horse face. Did you see that?
I did see that. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's insane, first of all, and. Mm. So I'm going to now like bring in a few things because this is, I found so interesting. So Melania, apparently there's this video out. The rapper T.I. came out with this song. And apparently there's a video where Melania's in the Oval Office stripping to this song. You know, not Melania herself, but someone that looks exactly like her.
Like, yeah, but
And her people are up in arms about it. Yep. And I'm like, okay, you're going to be mad that somebody made this video about you, but your husband is online on the airwaves on Twitter calling somebody a horse face. So he's the one setting the precedent for this kind of stuff. And then you're going to want, you want someone to take down a video? That's like, you know, their artistic right in this country to do.
Okay, but let me ask you a question, because you, according to our viewer response, you're the more balanced of the two of us. I'm obviously incredibly unbalanced. So
imbalanced. And you're bad at English.
And I'm bad at English. But at what point...
Are the Russians listening to this? Because every time we talk, there's like a shh, like there's some sort of interference. Did you hear that?
I didn't. No, I don't know. I mean, maybe they are. If the Russians are interfering, please don't hack into our podcast. Okay, we're doing very well without you guys. I don't need to be colluding.
Tell everybody what your mom calls the podcast.
My mom calls the podcast the Cash Pod, because my mom is email illiterate. She doesn't have any idea of how to turn on an iPhone. And so someone says podcast, she doesn't see the word, so she calls it Cash Pod. So, I mean, you know, so my wife has taken to calling it the Moose, Mooch and the Mrs. Cash Pod.
The Moose. Let's go back to this, though. I should start doing the show, The Moose. The Moose and the Mrs.
Yeah, well, if I keep eating, I'll definitely be Molto Moose and Tiny Mitt.
No, but you're looking good. You're looking good.
What is the point where Donald J. Trump crosses the Rubicon, jumps the shark, where people say, okay, time out. You just called a porn star who you could have had an affair with, may not have had an affair with, but I would say most people, when you look at the polling, think he had an affair with a horse face. At what point do people say, okay, that's enough?
I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
Do you remember that we listened to that so many times and just like couldn't believe it and laughed out of slight horrification and disbelief?
We laughed due to horrification, the fact that you and I have a perverse sense of tasteless humor.
The intonation in his voice, the like the whole thing makes, I could listen to it.
I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
Okay, but it's obviously not that funny, because he's making fun of like a crippled person, but I'm just saying now he's moving into the horse face territory. So I'm just asking, like, here's
Babe,
the thing,
I'm
Michael
dying
Abbott,
over here.
Oh, no, you're dying. I'm trying to be serious. I'm just trying to ask you the question. So does he ever cross over where people wave the white flag and say, okay, basta, to use the expression that Michael Avenatti uses in his tweets, basta means enough.
Right. No, actually.
Are people having enough, or they just continue to enjoy this and find that it's okay?
No, so that's interesting. All of this stuff kind of intertwines. So that, what he does ups the ante. Like every time he does something that it's like molto crazy, like the utmost crazy, you can't top it, he manages to top it. So now Avenatti, for example, he's saying, you know, now he's causing this sort of rift in the Democratic Party, because they're saying, okay, guy, you got to like slow it down, because now you're becoming as bad as Trump almost. Like the stuff that he's going off about now on social media and the way he's conducting himself, he started off like on a clear course, and he was very not reserved, but he was together and
lawyerly,
very, very, very poised and lawyerly, whatever the word is. And now he has stooped to the level, he's almost at Trump's level. You know, the stuff he's saying, he's calling him the porn president, and he's going on the same, he's on the same route. So now it's like the blind leading the blind. We're just all like spinning down into a spiral of hell. So
you see, but what he's also doing, which I find fascinating, in the tweet, he's basically saying she's going to confirm the letter that she signed. He did get her to sign a letter. She signed a letter and a sworn testimony, effectively, that she, quote unquote, did not have an affair with him. And so, you know, one wonders, if he didn't become president, would this issue have been raised Or would she have just accepted the $130,000 payment and moved on?
Of course. Why would I think she was fine with that? But then when he started campaigning and he became, you know, sort of the person we knew was going to be our president, she was like, wait a second. I need to tell people about the shady behind-the-scenes action. But I don't think she would have brought it up otherwise.
So Stormy Daniels enters the fray, and she says, game on, Tiny. So, I mean, she's calling him Tiny. Ugh. I mean, I know I could never eat a shiitake mushroom again if my life depended on that. But, I mean, you know, but I'm probably, I mean, you know me. I won't order miso soup now.
No, it's like,
until I have Alzheimer's. Okay. So Stormy and I, by the way, will be on Bill Maher's show together on October 26th.
So I know, but, you know, I was reading the notes that they sent us from the Bill Maher show, and it was funny to me because it was so ridiculous. Like, you cannot talk to Stormy. Nobody talk to Stormy. Like, she's some sort of strange celeb. I don't know. So did you see the Elizabeth Warren tweet, his tweet about her and the DNA, and she's a...
I caught that as well. And so, but I do think that she made a tactical mistake. And so then I'm just out of curiosity because I want to get your thoughts on this. So Michael Avenatti going into the Trump zip code, is he coming out okay or is he looking bad?
No, I think he's looking bad. And I like Michael. Okay. We've had this conversation. He's calling you last week on the podcast. We know him personally. But he's going down a very dangerous road with this because he thinks he needs to punch back 10 times harder than, Trump is punching. But I feel like he's losing his grip. He's on a slippery slope.
So this is the thing that I find astonishing.
He's going to start to make mistakes, He already has with Julie Swetnick.
Every person that does this with the president goes down this quote-unquote slippery slope and then ends up in a nightmare scenario that they didn't anticipate. Now, Stormy's calling him Tiny. You think that bothers him, or you think he's okay with that?
No, I think it bothers him.
Yeah. Okay. So
he doesn't like people saying bad things about him, as we all know.
Yeah, I think the Tiny thing is probably that's pretty aggressive. I would say the Tiny thing's bothering him.
Okay. Well, he's calling her a horse face, so touche. You know what I mean?
But let's go to Elizabeth Warren under the same genre. He's under her skin calling her Pocahontas.
He's allowed to do it, but if someone does it to him, he's so immature.
Pocahontas?
He can call anyone the bad. His tweet said Pocahontas, and then in parentheses it said the bad version. Like, we needed some clarity on the good version versus the bad version.
Well, because he had to apologize to Pocahontas. Remember, I've only heard him apologize three times. Okay, he's apologized the night of the Access Hollywood tape. He apologized to Theresa May when he did that interview. And then he apologized to Pocahontas because he was calling Senator Warren.
You mean
Pocahontas.
Like the actual Pocahontas, not...
Yes, yeah. He was apologizing to the ancestry of Pocahontas. Okay, and then I guess the last apology, apologized to Justice Kavanaugh on behalf of the American people. So, I mean, I've only heard four apologies.
Well, that's a bogus apology. Nobody asked him to do that, and nobody gives...
Warren, is she falling into the same trap as Ted Cruz, Senator Marco Rubio?
Yes, you know what this reminds me of? You know what this is? This is like the trap that I fall into on Twitter. When, normally, I post stuff and I use it for my news feed and I get info and check out what my friends are doing. But then sometimes curiosity gets the best of me when I'm up at 4 a.m. and I'm like, all right, let me read some of these comments. And then I see what they say about us and I'm like, oh God. So then I start writing back and they're like, ha ha, that's what I wanted you to do. And I always say to myself, damn, I just fell right into that person's trap. So that's what he does to people. He lures them in with his nonsense. They stoop to his level and then they somehow trip up and he looks like the man, not really the man, but he thinks he won the argument.
Okay.
So that's right. what's happening with Elizabeth Warren. That's what, now she's publicly humiliated by the whole Cherokee Nation. They're denying her and saying she's some bogus, 1,000 to the 24th
power. Social culture better than me. So when the rappers go off on each other and they do a rap off, right? like in the movie 8 Mile when Eminem was rapping off.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we having like a sort of Twitter version of a rap off at this point between Avenatti and Trump?
Yeah, and it's kind of getting old, but that's okay, so I wonder what people think about that. Send us your I want to know, you know, send us your opinions on that. I'm curious to know what people are thinking about that now.
Okay. But I want to make this point though, okay? He's also changed the syntax on Twitter. How many times do you see a statement made on Twitter and then the last word on Twitter is sad exclamation point. Sad.
Or phony.
Phony.
Fraud.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Everything.
Yeah. So he's actually changed the entire syntax in the conversation.
No, but he's the only one that writes. Like, whenever I see someone else writing like that, or if sometimes I'm typing something and it has shades of that, I delete it. And I'm like, backspace, I can't be writing like that. What did you think about his 60 Minutes? He speaks on 60 Minutes the way he writes on Twitter.
I'm impressed with the way he's able to spar with people.
It's called the double D. So he likes double D's in more than one kind of way. So obviously he likes like the stormy type double D's. And then he likes to deny and deflect. That's all he does.
Okay.
Leslie Stahl was like, what the hell are you? Like, she couldn't even, it was the craziest thing. She would ask him a point blank question and he would double D it.
Okay, but his fans like it. His fan, the people that are not
his fans.
Like it, but I want
who's a fan? Like, that's the wrong word. His constituency.
Whatever his constituency, the PS supporters. Mm-hmm. I want you to be Elizabeth Warren's communications director. Maybe you'll be You'll be the better communications director in the family. Obviously, I'm a failed one.
Mm-hmm.
So you're Elizabeth Warren's communications director. You're walking into her office this morning. She's 1/1024. Cherokee or some nonsense like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling her that was a good idea to release the DNA, or you're telling her that was the dumbest thing you've done so far as a politician?
Why are we even stooping to this level? And we need to focus on things that are actually important. But I would also say to her, if you were ever actually thinking of running in 2020, homie, you need to rewind, because she obviously not going to ever win against this person. She's no match for him. But most people aren't, because most people have a level of decency and sanity where they wouldn't go to these levels. You know when you always say water always sinks to the lowest level? Well, what's the term that you use? You always say it to me.
I say water always sinks to its lowest level.
Oh, okay. I got it right.
The Nick Lachey is out there now, so I think it's being overused.
The Nick Lachey? The what?
Okay. Should we let everybody know that you have a crush on the guy?
On Nick Lachey.
I call the guy Neil Lackey. Okay, I catch you looking at his Twitter feed. That's fine.
How do you catch me looking at it? Like, you're looking over my shoulder?
God.
Or because I retweet him? I retweet him.
Neil Lackey, yeah, you retweet him. I mean, Neil Lackey, you were probably watching that, like, reality TV show with him and Jessica Simpson when you were how old, like 14?
I do. I was in my 20s. I have all the DVDs. I used to watch them incessantly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So all of your fan base out there is laughing because they're just like you. They're
no, they probably have no idea who Nick Lachey is, but either way.
Probably
so you were saying
Neil,
the pig.
I watch Neil Lackey all the time.
So you said the pig analogy, or what'd you say?
No,
the pig?
When you're in a fight with the pig,
oh,
the
right.
Pig's snorting around, he's flopping around in the mud loving it, you're getting bloody and muddy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem is you're not a pig, so you can't deal with the slop.
No, but that goes back to the Avenatti thing. I don't think he wasn't born a piece of pork, but he's turning into it because he's trying to match himself up.
I predict that Avenatti will make an adaptation, and there's only one way to countermand that sort of verbal offensive, and that is with humor. And I would tell people, if you want to be an effective adversary to the president, you have to watch film clips of somebody like John F. Kennedy handle people that were criticizing
or Reagan.
Yeah. And you have to be able to use humor and you have to roll with the thing. So someone tells me I was there for 10 days, I say 11. I usually get a laugh out of that if they heard the joke before.
But Trump would never laugh, but that would actually be more effective because he would be so infuriated
You should hire Judd Apatow, and you should come up with daily jokes that you post on Twitter, and people would find that funny. And they would move on. One of the more famous things is when they They asked John Kennedy. They said, you're a dilettante and a playboy. People say you're too lazy to run for president, and your father is going to buy you the election.
Oh, yeah, I know this one. It's funny.
Kennedy looked at them and quipped and said, no, no, you don't understand. My father's a tightwad. He's only going to buy me one more vote than I need. I got to work my ass off for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it diffused the conversation. And so the problem here, if she showed up with a, you know, literally like an Indian chief's hat on, everybody would laugh. You know, Ronald Reagan's wife, Nancy, totally picked on. She went to the gridiron dinner.
Yeah, but then if she showed up with that, then a whole nother, you know, conglomerate of people would be offended. You can't even be funny anymore, you know?
Now it becomes a photo op for a second, but Nancy Reagan showed up dressed like a homeless person at one of the gridiron dinners, and it totally sapped everybody's strength of picking on her for the nouveau riche-like consumption that she used to do inside the White House. So, listen, I don't know. Here we are, Elizabeth Warren. Can she beat Donald Trump in the presidential election?
Hells no. And on that note, listen.
You mean if she gets the nomination in a debate where I was going to have her tested, I'll only do it if I can test her personally. Okay, that will not be something I enjoy doing either.
He acts like he's like so attractive and everything. I wish she really knew what people thought of him and his looks.
Okay, well, go ahead. I mean, you're unplugged. You've only had like 3 or 4 hours sleep from last night. So go ahead. What do people think of him?
No, he's not attractive. He's not physically attractive. There's nothing about him that's attractive. But so,
17 years old at this point.
Right, but he wasn't attractive. He was creepy looking back in the day too. So on 60 Minutes, Trump was talking about this whole situation in Saudi Arabia with the journalists and what went on. And I think we have a clip of what he says.
There's a lot at stake, and maybe especially so because this man was a reporter. There's something, you'll be surprised to hear me say that, there's something really terrible and disgusting about that if that were the case. So we're going to have to see. We're going to get to the bottom of it, and there will be severe punishment.
Okay, so he sent Mike Pompeo over there, right?
Yeah.
And basically they've been saying the same thing to us for the past week, and nothing has been resolved. And as we all know, the more time that passes after something like this happens, the less we know.
Yeah, no, he's walking it back, and you know, the crown prince and the king are positioning it that it was either accidental or it was rogue in its orientation and it was not premeditated. And you know, the truth of the matter is we'll never really know the truth of the story. But what I find fascinating about the time that we're living in today is that we're living in a time of almost total transparency now, so that there's no way to really shade things. So when Eisenhower ordered the assassination of the democratically elected leader of Iran in 1953, a guy called Mossadegh, they could smooth it over. But in the age where somebody can record their own execution off their iWatch and send it to somebody else while they're dying, I don't know. You know, you're not going to be able to get away with things anymore. And so then the question is, do we get all sanctimonious and self-righteous, or do you play the real politic of Trump, where he's saying, they're bad, we're bad, everybody's bad, let's move on? You've got 25% of the world's oil under the ground in Saudi Arabia. And from an economic perspective and a geopolitical perspective, we need them as an ally.
We're so, definitely not oil independent. Definitely not, right?
Well, we're in the process of becoming oil independent. You know, some would say, some energy experts say that we're already oil independent and positioned to be a net exporter, if not the net exporter. You remember Bethany McLean? She used to come to Salt.
Yeah.
She just wrote a book called Saudi America, where the most fascinating thing is, because of the technology and the fracking and all this other stuff, we're in a position now to be a net exporter. But we still need Saudi Arabia because we want low, stable oil prices.
Right. Oil prices would jack up if we cut them off.
We want the Saudi to help us with the Israelis. So what would you do? You're the president of the United States, President Deirdre. Okay, so what do you do here? Do you help the Saudis? You defend the Saudis? You Go after the Saudis. What are we doing?
Well, I have a problem with Trump because he always defends people. Well, he's going with the innocent until proven guilty thing, but he always jumps to people and places defense before, you know, he should just say, we have to see, not he automatically assumes that people are wrongly accusing them. Like, you know, he's denied so many things that in the end turned out to be true, like Manafort or Rob Porter, even though you're probably mad at me for saying that, or what else? I don't know. He's denied so many things that in the end happen to be true. So now he's saying it probably wasn't Saudi. They probably had nothing to do with it. And I hate that he does that, you know, because he always defends someone or something that in the end winds up looking bad. So what I would do, I would really try to somehow, I mean, Turkey is no better than Saudi Arabia as it relates to, you know, human rights, but they need to kind of put the full court press on these people to investigate this in like a proper fashion. And if they want to remain in business with us, quote unquote, but they have to kind of do the right thing and really look into it and get to the bottom of it, not just some phony.
The investigation's over and you've discovered that the Crown Prince unilaterally ordered the murder and the assassination / chop up of the journalist, then what do you do?
You really have to put some sanctions on and back yourself away from these people. You can't do business with people that treat their like civilians or citizens like crap. You can't set that precedent because then you're just saying that the only thing that matters in life is the almighty dollar. Because then people in this country one day will be killing each other in the streets and no one will care. You're going down a really bad path if you're going to. It's like condoning. It's being complicit. You can't do that.
Okay, I totally agree with you. I think it opens, you have a finger in the dike, and if you let your finger out of the dike, it will expose a lot of different things. And I think one potential valid criticism here is that the president has signaled, because of his friendship with the Saudis and because of his need to get their help in the Mideast peace process, they may have taken some latitude there and taken some license. Again, I don't know the full facts of the case, but the flip side of me also says that we need to have a relationship with them. It's been an enduring 80-plus year relationship, and you know, there's some levels of hypocrisy in it, as there are with a lot of our geopolitical relationships. But I think we need to have the relationship. But Pocahontas cannot beat, Senator Warren cannot beat Trump.
No. Why are we going back to that?
Because I'm curious, because I got another question.
She can't beat him.
Cory Booker could beat Trump?
No. No.
Because can Michael Avenatti beat Trump?
He has the most, I mean, out of all of those people, he probably has the highest shot or probability of not beating him, but at least being a contender, like, and being sort of in the same zip code. But the other two, no way. Too wishy-washy.
Michael's got some verbal dexterity to him, right?
Yeah, and he is sharp and everything like that. But he's just, I don't know, he's probably not getting much sleep. He's got a lot going on, and he's nonstop. So that's when you make mistakes. So, listen, I want to go back to this whole issue, you know, foreign relations or whatever you want to call it. But so this whole thing with the pastor who was held against his will in Turkey for 2 years, who just came back this weekend. What do you think about that? You know, I laugh because we have the TV on a lot because of the kids, and not that they're advertising for travel on Nick Jr., but I always see these commercials for Turkey and come visit Istanbul and come visit. And I always laugh to myself, like, no, because I might not come back. So they are beautiful places. They're exotic places. And I'm sure there are a ton of people there that are wonderful. And it is such a shame that we can't boost their economy and do things to help them by visiting because we're afraid of things like that go on, like being held against your will for 2 years or, you know, you go into a consulate and you never come back out. So what do you do about that?
Well, did you feel unsafe in Cuba when we went in 2012?
I don't know if I felt I felt a little unsettled. I'm not going to lie. Didn't you sometimes feel a little bit unsettled?
when the lights were browning out in the hotel, I was like, okay, this is a little bit of a bummer, you know. And plus, you with your hair, there was no way you were going to get your hair blow dried.
Oh, situation. My God. And no, but the fact of the matter is we slept, I can't believe we didn't leave there like Quasimodo because we slept in a twin bed together. It was like college up in there. But
definitely. Their five-star hotel was like a quarter of a star here. But no, I mean, I think the places like Istanbul are beautiful. There's a majesty to those places. And also, there's an imperative there by the Turkish government to keep tourists safe in a place like that. Otherwise, I mean, because that's a very big component of their tourism. I crossed into the West Bank / Judea and Samaria territory of what is potentially going to be the Palestinian Authority's state, and entered Bethlehem.
That can get pretty scary.
Yeah, the birthplace of Jesus, and you know, my security team that was with me said that while this place can get hot, it very rarely gets hot around Bethlehem or the church, primarily because there's commercial rationality where if they start blowing up people by the church and they cut the 3 million pilgrims that come to Bethlehem every year, it'll really put a hurt on their economy. So there's some realism there. But I do agree that a lot of places are unsafe. You know, I've been to, as you know, and you were mad at me, I've been to Afghanistan and Iraq during our relationship. The places are unsafe. Afghanistan is so unsafe that the American military travels by helicopter in Afghanistan for fear of these IEDs blowing up one of their transports.
Yeah.
So places are unsafe, but in the world is basically unsafe. And, you know, my opinion, and I'm interested to hear yours, America can't be the problem solver for the world in all of these places.
No, you can't be all things to all people. I'm just saying it's funny how they spend so much money trying to appeal to us to come there when they should really use that to try to get everything together over there and, you know, and make it more appealing and more safe and just a better place for people to live.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, it's also on a lighter note, you know, so two things. I was laughing because last week, I stumped you. You have no idea what the words to the Golden Girls theme song was, right?
Yeah.
And today I was on Twitter and people.com had an article about this this company called Funko, F-U-N-K-O. They make like these little statues and all these things, and they make all these funny cereals. They're coming out with a Golden Girls cereal. So it struck my fancy.
Like dentures and stuff like that? I mean, like, what's going to be in the
cereal? Oh, my God. Imagine the cereal was just little white dentures, like marshmallows. No, it's actually blue. Like, it looks like Fruit Loops, but it's all blue, like the same color as the Viagra pill.
Just to let you know, all of you health-conscious moms out there, Deirdre Scaramucci would not let me buy Booberry in the Target over the weekend.
Okay? By the way, Target is the one that sells the Golden Girls thing, it said, so I'm running there after the podcast.
Okay, so you see,
I'm going to pick up some of that and the M&Ms for Halloween, the cookies and scream.
Not a political hypocrite, but a diet hypocrite. Deirdre Scaramucci can't buy the Booberry or the Frankenberry for me and my son Nick, but she's going to go buy the Golden Girls denture.
For myself. Viagra blue circles. So speaking of Viagra.
Got Viagra in it? Okay, go ahead.
I don't know, but you can try it when you get back from Michigan.
Okay, you know I don't need Viagra. I mean, let's be on the record on that, please.
That's because I'm so good-looking.
Deedle tried to give me a blue pill, put it on the counter. He says, this is my gift to you. I said, I don't want it.
When and where and why and how?
I was on his podcast, One Tough Podcast.
He hands out Viagra. That's some geriatric type situation.
You were so good on the podcast, I'm going to hand you one of my Viagra. I'm like, Bo, I don't need the Viagra. And so he put it on the table. And he's like, I'm not taking it back. And then the minute I got up to walk away, he looked around and he goes, this pill is $25. He put it back in his wallet. I love this guy.
He carries that, like, you know, you go, okay.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I don't know if you have to carry that. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Did you hear your sneeze in the background? So, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, speaking of Viagra, did you see anything about this? Thank God you and I didn't split up because I don't think I could handle going on dating websites. So they have this thing called Donald Daters. It's a new dating app. So it launched this week.
Bing, bing, bing. Bomb, bomb. I love you very much.
Oh, my God. That's for you, Aunt. So,
okay, well, I love you too, Mr. President. So go ahead. What is the bing, bing, bing?
So it's this dating app, you know, like Tinder or those, whatever, Cupid.com, where, so it's just going to help Trump supporters find, like, their lover. Because apparently people are having, like, conservative people are having a hard time meeting other conservative people online. They're being trolled on these dating websites by liberals. So, like, literally, people will say, like, don't swipe left if you like Donald Trump, you know, because swiping left, I guess, on Tinder is means you want to know more about the person. So literally, he has taken life and the society to a whole new level. We now have a dating app named after the Donald.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning. And you'll say, please, please, it's too much winning.
Oh,
it's nonstop commotion, but you got to think about what this guy did. He's like the human wrecking ball. Okay, he came in, he wrecked the establishment political system.
Yeah, we need
system.
That song, Miley Cyrus.
You know, you and I are on the verge of divorce. He's blown up families. People can't even talk to each other at Thanksgiving.
And he's like, I'm the best, and I'm like winning. And meanwhile, Alec Baldwin is saying we need to overthrow the government because he's the president and nobody could
think of that. Did you see that speech? I was looking at that speech this morning.
We change governments here at home in an orderly and formal way. And in that orderly and formal way and lawful way, we need to overthrow the government of the United States under Donald Trump.
Well, he's basically just talking about the elections and that people need to get out to vote. You know, he was using some aggressive terminology, but he doesn't literally mean like stage a coup and over, you know, he just means get out and vote.
Okay, so are these winning strategies, or is Donald J. Trump going to be president through the 2000 January 20th, 2025?
Well, unfortunately, I think the Democrats are basically talking to, you know, when people say, you know, you're preaching to the choir. That's basically what they're doing. You know what I mean? They're just talking amongst themselves.
So they're not going out.
I don't think they're reaching anybody beside the people that are already in the tent. I don't know. What do you think? I think for sure
I think they can win the House. I think they lose the Senate. But I think that he is right now looking at the landscape, unless somebody adapts and pivots to his entrepreneurial style of being a politician, without an adapt and pivot, I don't think there's anybody in the field that can beat him. And I think somebody like Michael, who I have a lot of respect for, and I think he's very smart, would have a hard time getting the nomination because these people typically like going with establishment people. And look at what the Democratic Party did to Bernie Sanders last time. I mean, they basically rigged the system to prevent Bernie Sanders from getting anywhere close to the nomination. And so they're probably going to rig the system for one of the establishment favorites, and I just don't see any of those establishment favorites being able to deal with the human paper shredder known as Donald J. Trump. So we'll have to see what happens.
I can't wait till the midterm elections are over. So then we don't have to speculate. We can just say. So, but before the midterm elections, you know what I'm looking forward to? Because it's fun now that we have two kids that only trick-or-treat. So I'm looking forward to Halloween. And I'm reading online that if any of our three older children tried to trick-or-treat in Chesapeake, Virginia, they'd get thrown in the slammer. There's like a law. Okay, so you can't go trick-or-treating if you're over 12.
What was the rationale behind that law? I know you've been talking about that all week. You've been flipped out about it. So you've been a quiet and secret trick-or-treater well into your 30s, obviously.
Once you become a parent, you can go trick-or-treating again under the guise of, you know, that you're bringing your kids around for candy. But I'm wearing my Mrs. Incredible costume this year, and I got you a Mr. Incredible costume. So we would get arrested if we lived
in. I need like a man's ear and a girdle to be wearing that.
Part of it is it has fake muscles built into it, so it just covers up anything
and
everything.
I'll be wearing that under my suit then, long after Halloween.
And you could put a sock in the crotch, really flip people out.
I'm on the Drudge Report. Okay, and the top of the Drudge Report says, "President rips horse face Stormy."
You're going back to this?
No, but I just
that was the first thing. What?
It goes. Game on, Tiny. Game on, Tiny.
Okay. Yeah, we live in a frat house called the U.S. of A.
Okay, so this thing is just gonna burn like crazy, like now, right? The fire. Is
I don't know.
Raging.
I can't talk about horse face and Tiny anymore. Let's talk about our favorite candy. So tell everybody what you do, that you freeze Reese's peanut butter cups and eat them incessantly when no one's looking. And I find wrappers all over the place.
Okay, I'm a terrible closet eater. There's no question about that. Literally will stand in the closet and eat. So open the door to the closet, there's the food, and I start wolfing.
Once a week we go to Target, like on Sundays, and he always buys like pink unicorn icing and all this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, when are we ever using it? I'm the only one that bakes. He doesn't even know how to make toast. So, but he doesn't buy it to bake. He just buys it to eat. He literally eats the icing. It's so bad. It's
all right, like, but I do dip Oreo cookies.
And then he wants to know why our kids are like, I need sugar. Ah, I don't want that broccoli. I need sugar.
Oh. Okay. Let's talk about Miss Dorito Woman at 12:30 pre-Perioso.
Oh my God, Ann! That's because we went to a wedding. I didn't eat anything.
400 pounds of salt.
No, to be clear, I ate a half a bag of nacho Doritos and then I ate an entire column or row of Chips Ahoy. But you were no help to me because you bought a new Chips Ahoy the next day.
At what time of night were you doing this?
Yeah, like 2 a.m. Okay, so let's talk about some of these tweets. I'm saying treats because I'm still thinking about candy. Okay, so we have a tweet here from one of our listeners. Thank you for sending this in, Madison Rising. We see you out there. You're always in tune with us and writing to us. So both religion and politics, this is a very cerebral question, Scaramucci, so get ready. Both religion and politics are strongly based on dogmatic ways of thinking and are highly divisive topics. Do you think they're just different manifestations of the same thing? Can we consider religion to be the residual politics of thousands of years ago? And can we learn from this? So interesting.
Okay, so I think that's a fascinating thing. Ben Sasse, who's a Republican senator from Nebraska, basically wrote a new book about what's dividing us, and he is saying that he really believes that there's been a fracture in the society, meaning that there's less religious devotion, there's less religious passion, there's a rise in secularism and atheism in the society, or at least an indifference to going to church and binding ourselves through church. And so we're finding political networks, and the fact that when we turn on the television, politics is there, clear and present. We're finding that to be binding us. So I think Madison Rising is actually onto something. A lot of people are talking about this, but the truth of the matter is the politics does not seem to make us happy. Years ago, the things that binded us, like a family dinner or meeting at our Nana's house on a Sunday to cook macaroni or to be at church at a certain time or to be part of the community chest or things like that seem to be more fulfilling. That social interaction seemed to be better for us. This is like a war. It's like an ongoing war.
Right, but that's what religion was 5,000 years ago.
Yeah, 5,000 years ago, but after it matured, people used it as a pretty good
Well, it can be a binding agent, or it can be an extreme divider still, I think. Religion is pretty divisive in many ways.
I'm going to say something to Madison Rising, though, that I think that is worth listening to. I think this era that we're in has a little bit of the McCarthyism of the mid-1950s, meaning it burned very, very bright, and people are like, okay, there's something wrong going on. This is, like, too hysterical. This was the communist Red Scare during the 50s, and then all of a sudden, it burnt out. And I think people will burn out from this level of polemics, this level of discourse, this level of argumentation. At some point, people are going to look at each other and say, okay, you know what? Really have had enough of this. I'm going to try to move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And in the McCarthy era, it sort of just happened. In fact, it wasn't really, you know, there's no one pushed it over the edge. It's just people looked at each other. It was like it gasped out, like it burned too bright for too long. I think that's happening right now. So Madison Rising is on to something. I think that the stuff related to politics is not making us happy as much.
No, it's and I was having lunch with somebody before this, and we were just saying it's like we're too entrenched in it. Before
was
people,
it Neil Lackey? Who were we having lunch with? Were we having lunch with Neil Lackey?
Yeah, right. I think you would have seen me post a picture of me and Neil Lackey over our vegan lunch if I had. No, I had lunch with a woman.
Hey,
but anyway, we got to wrap this whole thing up.
We have like a body slam sound effect after something like that. So, okay, keep going.
Yeah, we're
going
to wrap it up. But hopefully next week, are you going to show up again? Because I'm firing you, to quote your buddy Trump, if you don't get your booty in this studio. Are you coming next week?
I'll be sitting there right next to you next week, so that if I move on the seat, you can tell people in the audience that I farted. Okay, more fake news coming from the missus.
All right, it's a deal. We'll see you next Tuesday on radio.com, Mooch and the Missus. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. See you guys next week. Bye, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.